Welcome to the Long-Term Investing Podcast with Baskin Wealth Management. I'm Barry Schwartz, President and Chief Investment Officer. In this podcast, we ignore all the noise and have conversations about the things that matter in today's markets. It's what we talk about with each other here in the office, and we want to share those conversations with you. Please stay tuned for our legal disclaimer at the end of the episode. Welcome back to the podcast. We got a lot to talk about today. We'll start off with the Iran conflict. We'll also get to the Constellation Software conference call and the earnings report, as well as talk a little bit about their spinoffs. It's all good news. And of course, Live Nation seems to have settled its antitrust case with the Department of Justice. And so the stock has popped on that news, and we'll get into what that means for shareholders. But before we get into that, let's get into this. If you like the podcast, of course, please subscribe to us on Apple and Spotify and YouTube. We appreciate all your reviews. Please leave us feedback. Please send us emails if you have questions. And please contact us, of course, if you want to have a review of your portfolio. If you're interested in Baskin Wealth Financial Services and anything we can offer you, we'd love to talk to you about your portfolio. Ernest, another wild week in the markets. March has started off with wars and conflicts. It was easy to see this coming, of course. The U.S. built up a huge armada and moved it over to the Middle East. Many were expecting the U.S. and Israel to launch attacks on Iran. That went through last week. The market reacted initially very negative. Then there was a little bit of a recovery. The acceleration, of course, of the conflict over this weekend. We're recording this on March the 9th, of course. And markets are trying to find some stabilization. Oil prices went up to about $120 a barrel this morning. Or
WTI.
Yeah. On the futures. Cooled off, of course, to the mid-90s. That's good news. And we're seeing some announcement that they'll try and increase production, figure out how to get way to get oil prices down, and hopefully there's not too many issues with getting oil and gas transferred through the all-important Straits of Hormuz in Iran. But the bottom line is more uncertainty for the markets. It just keeps continuing. And what are we doing, of course, Ernest, in this environment?
No, so I think the fear for Iran is that I think everybody who was around in the 1970s will recall the last time there was geopolitical issues relating to Iran and the Middle East, mm-hmm. where oil had spiked, interest rates were low, and that led to stagflation, which ultimately ended with high interest rates in the 80s.
It was nasty. Yeah. High interest rates in the 70s and 80s, and not very good stock markets. So we're all hoping for a fast resolution to whatever's going on there. We're not weapons strategists, generals, military experts. What's right or wrong for each country?
We're not experts on oil flows out of the Middle East now?
No, all we're trying to do is make our clients lots of money. But, you know, once in a while, something will get thrown into the mix that stops it. We've been through a lot of these conflicts before where the price of oil spikes. Obviously, the one that comes most recent to memory is 2022. Yep. And the Russia-Ukraine conflict still ongoing, of course. The price of oil, I think I spiked to $120 a barrel for a short period of time. Also impacted trade and fertilizer. We have no clue, of course, how long this goes on or how it impacts global trade. But obviously, the longer it goes on, the worse it's going to be.
I do think the situation is quite different from the 1970s, though, for a few reasons. Number one is that the U.S. itself is today a major energy producer, mm-hmm. whereas that wasn't the case in the 70s.
Great
where
points.
The whole world was much more reliant on Middle East oil at the time. Mm-hmm. So that's number one. Number two is that the overall amount of oil that people are consuming, just how much people are spending on gasoline, is much lower than it was in the 70s as well. So I think at that point it was about 5% of a person's like personal consumption. Mm-hmm. Today it's under 2%. So while, you know, nobody likes to pay higher gasoline prices, I think it's a much more manageable situation overall.
Mm-hmm. And of course, the offset for corporate profits is obviously oil and gas companies are getting a windfall as a result of this. But if it lingers, it could impact input pricing for other commodity companies and cyclical businesses, right? We're seeing trucking companies down today, logistics, airlines, of course, being impacted, hotels. It's too hard to make any decisions based on short-term events, so we're not gonna adjust our portfolio based on this type of macro. But obviously, we're watching and hoping for a good outcome for all.
Yeah, and I think a lot of people often ask us, like, "Well, what are you gonna do if there is stagflation or these kinds of economic issues?" Mm-hmm. And answer is usually nothing, because fundamentally, we own good businesses that, in good or bad times, they're still gaining market share over their competitors. Mm-hmm. So in the period of stagflation or whatever, it's actually more likely that these companies are going to outperform their competitors and end up being stronger than they otherwise would. So there's no need for us to make any changes.
That's right. In any event, we make changes, as you know, based upon the quality of the businesses that we're researching and the valuations of the companies that we own, and always looking for the best ideas wherever we can find them for your portfolio. We've talked about some decisions that we've made for the portfolio last week on the podcast, and we think we'll be a little more active in 2026 versus 2025. So with that covered, let's get into Constellation Software. For clients that know, we sold our shares of Adobe. We bought more shares of Constellation Software a few weeks ago on the dip. Obviously, we're pretty pleased with that short-term trade, but we bought it because of long-term conviction. The company Constellation and spinoffs reported as good earnings as expected. Yep. If you're not going to pay attention to the rest of this podcast, all you need to know is for now, there's not a lot of impact from AI on the software business in terms of disrupting Constellation Software, Topicus, and Lumen.
Yeah, I think from a top and bottom line perspective, like basically there was no impact from AI that was noticeable yet. Like they said, on the one hand, we're not getting disrupted by AI. On the other hand, we're not benefiting from AI as well, even if there are some things that we're working on with regards to it.
So I think a lot of companies and individuals are paying for added AI services, whether it's Copilot, ChatGPT Plus, Gemini Plus, those type of additive features. But I don't think it's done anything in terms of replacing software or your CRM systems or any of your books of record. And so that was really our call, is that we think Constellation Software, it's too easy to say software get disrupted, because these software companies have so much more going for them than just selling a piece of services, right? It's the network effect, it's distribution, it's making changes, it's a book of record, it's regulatory issues, it's at the outsourcing, the capabilities of the firms you're selling the software to. So much to consider, and we really think it's business as usual. So a lot of interesting tidbits on the conference call today, led by CEO Mark Miller. A lot of shout outs to Mark Leonard. So it sounds like we don't know if he's coming back full time, but he's certainly active in the business, and hopefully his health issues have stabilized. So, Ernest, you looked at the call, you read the earnings. I'll turn it over to you.
Yeah, and again, like this was the first conference call that they've held for earnings, I think, since 2018. Okay. So it was really good to be able to hear their voices and kind of see how they're thinking about everything that's going on.
Who asked questions? Was it analysts?
Yeah, it was sell side analysts.
Got it.
Just no different than any other earnings call from other companies. Mm-hmm. I think there were a few things. Number one is, like, how does everything that's happening change the way Constellation is deploying capital? Mm-hmm. And on the one hand, they said basically nothing. They're still going out and making offers to acquire software companies. What has changed a little bit is that they now added a AI filter with which they are modeling the returns for acquisitions. Mm-hmm. So for every deal that they're doing, they are saying, okay, well, if AI disrupts it, then what's the cash flow is going to be? On the flip side, if AI ends up benefiting, like, what can we use AI to benefit the business for? Mm-hmm. And so they're adding that layer into their modeling for acquisitions. And I think that makes a lot of sense.
I think people need to understand that Constellation Software, and we've said it before, tends to buy what we call GDP type businesses, right? It's not buying this fast growing software that comes out of nowhere that sells, you know, new services and special AI features. It really sells to entrenched businesses where a very niche product. So like, think about running, I don't know, let's say you're running a golf course, right? And you're probably not experts on software development. You outsource your payments, your tee times, all this stuff to a software. You're probably using Constellation Software. It's not like new golf courses are popping up all over the world left and right, at a fast pace. Maybe if your Constellation Software, you charge a price of 3% increase a year on the software, and ad hoc if you need adjustments or what have you. And I don't think any golf course is looking to swap out its software that has probably been paying for decades to a company and very happy with it, all of a sudden to do it on its own and take those risks.
And more importantly, they're paying a very small, the golf course is probably paying a very low price for that software that, you can get a shinier new version, but like, what's the benefit?
But in the meantime, let's say Constellation Software buys this, a golf course software and a company, and it's selling it to services to other golf courses. It's a slow growth business. You're really just making a little bit money on pricing, but they're buying it because of the cash flow that they think they'll generate over the next 10 to 15 years from this software. And because they're paying such a low price, and because they can do some things to increase maybe the sales or the reach or the margins, they can model out, even if the software gets disrupted in 10, 15 years, they can model out a very good return on that.
No, and I think that was kind of the focus that Mark and the Chief Investment Officer Bernard wanted to kind of reiterate on the call, which is that Constellation often has very deep industry knowledge about the verticals that they're operating in. So, like, one example I like to use is that in Indonesia, I think I might be getting the number kind of wrong. But I think there's something like 30 golf courses and 28 of them use a Constellation Software solution, right? So Constellation Software really understands the Indonesian golf market. And so that gives them the opportunity to now go in and use AI to kind of increase the efficiency of their product and the services that they're selling into this market. Like, it's kind of theoretically plausible that like me or you or the golf course itself could now say, I'm going to use Claude Code and make my own software. But then what's the benefit? Constellation can already do it for you.
That's right. And if you're a golf course and your members can't book a tee time, like, you don't want to futz around with it to save a few bucks. I assume if you can do it for free or cost you, but that's illogical and not a good argument, because nothing is free. You have to use the computer space, the time, what have you. There'll be errors. And so really it's business as usual for Constellation Software. Speak about some other interesting things that they're doing. One of them, of course, is buying stakes in publicly traded software companies.
Yeah. So they launched a new, I don't even want to call it a strategy.
Yeah.
They started buying stakes in public companies and doing effectively what is activist investing in these companies. So they did one with a company called Sabre, where they bought, I think, 15% or something like that of the stock.
Sabre runs like the software for all travel bookings, right?
Yeah, it's a third-party travel bookings. And it's you can look at the stock price. It's not a awesome, like, it's a sticky business, but they have a better competitor in Amadeus, and they have a terrible balance sheet. And so Constellation has been buying up stock, and they recently got on the board of this company. And so they said, given what what's happening to software valuations overall because of fears of AI, they want to do more of these, right? They think there's opportunity for them to go and make money buying public software stocks. Maybe joining the board and giving a little bit of guidance as to how things can be improved, and then making money that way.
So a little different strategy. They're not going to acquire Sabre altogether. It could happen.
Right.
But trying to make the activist stake, make the stock go up by introducing best practices or some kind of financial.
Maybe go and tell Salesforce they're going to cut half the staff or something like that.
Yeah. So, and they spent a lot of money on these acquisitions, right? I think they spent about $700 million after the quarter on.
Well, some of it was for Asseco, which was with Topicus. Mm-hmm. But I think the bigger point is that one of the things that we've always liked about Constellation is they find creative ways to deploy capital. Mm. And I think that this is just another example of that, where I think it'll be, we'll see how this goes, but I really like that they're doing this.
One interesting note that kind of goes counter to what we've been reading in the headlines in the news is Constellation says private values for software have not fallen in price.
Right.
So there's a weird conundrum going on where everybody's freaking out about private software owned by private equity and no market for that. Yet when Constellation says they're trying to make acquisitions, the prices haven't budged.
Well, I think it's different if you own your own business and like you're like, of course, you think that your own business is still worth more than what the market is saying.
For sure.
Right?
You're not going to sell. What did Constellation say about competitors or private equity? Did they mention anything?
No, that wasn't a topic. Mm-hmm. I think the one thing that is interesting was that so people said, well, now that there's all this AI stuff popping up, like how are you implementing this at your businesses? And so one thing that basically what they said is, well, we're a decentralized business. We let the businesses operate the way that they feel is appropriate for their marketplace. Mm-hmm. And we take that same approach with AI, right? We let, they have these events where people can talk to each other and say, well, I'm doing this and I'm doing that, and maybe you find it useful.
So they're sharing best ideas across hundreds of different companies.
But ultimately, how you implement AI, whether you use that to create like an AI agent or using it to create like an AI chatbot or lower your costs or whatever, that's up to you to decide, right? And as a business unit manager, that's what your compensation is going to be based on, whether ultimately you're making money and not like a top-down mandate of you have to implement AI into your business.
Mm-hmm. Anything else you want to cover in the conference call that?
Well, one last thing on the activist strategy is it sounds like it's being led by Mark Leonard. Mm-hmm. So I think he's hopefully recovered and
Mark Leonard has the energy to watch the public stock prices and come up with valuations and say, let's put some money in this one, that one. And so very interesting. And this is not really something that Constellation has ever done, right? A little bit of it.
Yeah, but not really.
No, but I think what they're telling you is if prices stay low in public markets, we're happy to be aggressive putting bids in for great businesses businesses that fit our model that one day we maybe could buy out altogether.
And it makes a lot of sense.
Yeah. Okay, so business as usual, really, for Constellation and Topicus. We've seen their stock prices recover a bit, so we're pleased with that. But I think, you know, if the market continues to get comfortable that AI is neither a risk and maybe even a benefit, I think you'll still see a lot more recovery on a lot of these kind of names. So excited to have Constellation Software as one of our top holdings. On to another large holding for us is Live Nation. I think, Ernest, we started buying Live Nation for clients in 2015. I got to tell you that this is a company that when I talk about Live Nation, people say, oh, they're disgusting. I hate them. Or they're a monopoly.
I hate them too.
Yeah. Why would you own that? Blah, blah, blah. And all we've done is make gobs of money on the stock.
Right.
Has it been an easy ride? No, absolutely not. We also had to contend with the pandemic where no one could go to concerts for pretty much a year. And then, you know, it was all messed up for a number of years after that. We had to contend with worries about the company potentially being broken up by the antitrust, breaking up Live Nation and Ticketmaster into two separate companies. The court case finally started, and many people were hoping that Live Nation could settle it before the court case started. It started, but it seems that a settlement has been being sniffed out here.
Right. It was reported today, this morning, that there was a settlement reached between the Department of Justice and Live Nation. It's kind of weird because I think the judge himself wasn't informed that there was a settlement.
Yeah.
And he was kind of upset about it.
Well, he wanted the case to continue? Okay.
But regardless, there is a agreement between the two parties, mm-hmm. where there's not going to be a breakup of Live Nation and Ticketmaster. Mm-hmm. Basically, Ticketmaster has to pay a fee, a fine of, I think, $200 million. They will have to sell.
Yeah, just chump change, right? $200 million.
Yeah.
I mean, no, the good news for Live Nation is it's been very, very profitable the last number of years, and so it's not great to pay that kind of fine, but they certainly generate any excess cash flow, and they should be able to recover that quite quickly.
Yeah, so $200 million fine. They have to sell a couple of amphitheaters.
Mm-hmm. Why?
Because and this is kind of getting into the weeds of the case, mm-hmm. but mm-hmm. it was found that they did have a monopoly position in the amphitheater market in the U.S., where they own about 80% of the amphitheaters that exist.
And amphitheaters are what? Outdoor concert venues that used in warm weather?
Yeah. Right.
Yeah.
Yeah. These smaller type special music venues.
So they have they have a monopoly because they acquire them and they have the best products and the best services and the best relationship. Right. I mean, you're faulting them for running a good business, but anyways.
They have to sell about 10 of them, I think.
Okay.
They have to provide some of their technology to competitors like SeatGeek and StubHub. And lastly, there's some restrictions on the contracts that they can have with the venues, which was kind of the issue at hand. Right.
Reading all the remedies, are any of them material to the overall business going forward?
So I think that the big picture was that earlier in February, the judge had already thrown out certain parts of the lawsuit, mm-hmm. where basically at this stage, the Department of Justice was trying to salvage whatever it could get, right? Because they were going to lose.
Yeah.
And so they kind of put together some things that they could get, and Live Nation agreed to it, so to avoid going to trial, and that's kind of the outcome that it is. Mm-hmm. I think that what's interesting is that at the time of the original Live Nation Ticketmaster merger, there was a similar condition where they were forced to provide their technology to their main competitor.
Okay.
But that didn't end up, the competitor didn't do anything with the technology, right?
That's on the competitor, yeah.
So this time, I think, though, it is a meaningful thing for mm-hmm. them to do, because they've developed some interesting tools like Verified Fan.
Will they be able to charge, obviously, to their competitors a fee? I mean,
we don't know yet.
We don't know how it's going to play out. Okay.
I don't think it's been kind of officially spelled out how it'll work yet. But I think it's good for their competitors.
Right. I mean, clearly Live Nation wouldn't agree to the settlement if it was extremely detrimental to their business, right? So,
but I think the more important thing is that Live Nation has been pivoting its business regardless of this case anyways, to position for, whatever happened. So that included increasingly owning the venues, where like 40% of all the fans last year were at a Live Nation owned or operated venue, mm-hmm. right? So those were going to be people who use Ticketmaster regardless of what happened.
Yeah.
And in the settlement, there's now a cap on the fee that Ticketmaster can charge for those type of events, mm-hmm. which is capped at 15%. So 15% fee on Live Nation operated venues. Mm-hmm. And secondly, now, and of course, like Live Nation's increasingly been going international as well, where almost half of all their events now are happening outside of the U.S.
Without any regulation covers by the Department of Justice. Yeah,
so I think basically not very material. Mm-hmm. Good for them to get this out of the way.
And how's the concert business doing? How's what's the comment on the Live Nation business at the moment?
Oh, it's going great. And I think this kind of goes back to the original thesis about Live Nation, which is that as music is being streamed, like as streaming of music and Spotify and those kinds of things increasingly get bigger, what happens is that music becomes a commodity, right? Mm-hmm. Like you don't really care what you're listening to on Spotify.
Yeah.
And so the value of live music grows both for the artist and for the person listening to it, because that's where the special, the connection to the music really happens. Mm-hmm. And Live Nation is the main beneficiary of that.
Sounds amazing. So
that's kind of reiterated in the results, where they're growing like 10% every year, right?
And so the stock is near an all-time high. We'll see how Constellation stock does going forward, but clearly the stock has fallen really for no reason. Company says business as usual. Live Nation, it's very happy to get this distraction off the table. Yeah. Now they can focus on a business as usual, but that's just the markets. It's always something.
Or maybe the markets will now worry about AI on Ticketmaster.
It's always something. I've got nothing else to say. Anything else you want to finish off with?
Nope, sounds good.
All right, so we'll see you back here real soon. Thank you so much for joining us. This podcast is for informational purposes only, and any forecasts on the economy, markets, or individual securities should not be viewed as investment advice, a recommendation or an offer or solicitation to buy or sell any securities. Clients of Baskin Wealth Management and the speakers on this podcast may own shares of the companies discussed. Information on this podcast is current as of the time of production and is subject to change. If you have any questions or would like to subscribe to these podcasts, visit our website at baskinwealth.com.